Welcome to Wealthability, where we're always learning how to make way more money and pay way less tax. Hi, this is Tom Wheelwright, your host, and I'm very excited today to think about this question. What if you could actually increase your deductions, lower your taxes, while postponing tax on your income? Actually, think about this. Actually lowering your taxes, okay, by increasing deductions simply because you postponed your tax on other income. So it's a twofer, right? We get two benefits. We get to postpone income and we get additional deductions. We've literally shown thousands of students over the years how to take advantage of deductions that otherwise would be limited. So today you're going to learn how to postpone income to a later year for the purpose of not just postponing that income, but so you can take more deductions today. So let's look again at cash flow quadrant. And remember how the tax law works. So we're going to start with earning income as an employee, as a self-employed person, as a business owner, big business owner, and as a professional investor. And you recall that tax rates generally, if you make a good income as an employer, 40%, as a specialist, 60%, like a doctor, lawyer, as a big business owner, goes down to 20%, and a professional investor down to potentially 0%. Now you'll recall that 6,000 pages is what constitutes the tax law. Now that's not regulations, anything else. 6,000 pages. Of that 6,000 pages, there's one line that says all income's taxable unless we say it isn't. And it's, by the way, currently taxable unless we say it isn't. All expenses are non-deductible. In other words, nothing is deductible unless there's a specific provision in the code, the Internal Revenue Code, to allow that deduction. There are credits we've talked about in other courses. And then there's charts and tables that tells how much tax to pay, right? Now, that's about 30 pages, total about 30 pages. So of that 6,000 pages, 30 pages is how to raise revenue, and 5,970 pages, more or less, is how to reduce or eliminate your taxes, which is what we're all about here at Wealthability, reducing your taxes so you pay less tax and have way more money to invest and you make way more money. So of that 5,970 pages, most of it, roughly 5,500 to 5,600 pages, is all about permanent tax reduction. Permanent tax reduction, that's what we talk about in tax-free wealth, okay? It's permanent tax reduction. And that is by far the best kind of tax reduction, is permanent. Now there's about 400 pages that focus on this idea of deferral. And the idea of deferral is we're going to postpone income to a later year. So of course we would rather have permanent tax reduction. However, what we may find is we might get to a point where we've done all the permanent tax reduction we can within our wealth strategy, okay? Within what we've decided how to build our wealth. We've done all the permanent tax reduction we can do, and we still have taxable income. So postponing that income is certainly better than paying tax on it now. There's no question. You run the numbers, postponing income is better than paying tax currently. Now, there are certain times when postponing income isn't just good because we don't want to tax now, but because it may free up other tax benefits, both deductions and credits. So what we're going to do is we're going to start by walking through what that limitation number is and basically how that's calculated. And then we're going to look at some of the tax benefits that are limited by your amount of income. And we're going to look at then ways to defer your income or postpone it so that you can bring your income down currently, both so you pay less tax now, but also so that you free up these tax benefits. Because here's what we have. If you even just looking at this chart, you can say, okay, as a highly paid employee, I might pay 40%. Remember that highly paid employee also has a 10% tax bracket, right? So it's anywhere from 10% to 40%. Because the way the tax laws work in the US and other countries, most other countries, is that the more income you earn, the more taxable income you earn, it's not just that you're paying more tax, it's that you're paying tax at a higher rate. So you're paying a higher proportion of the income you earn in tax. So if you make a low income, you may pay only 10% of your income in tax. Once you get to a certain level, okay, then you're gonna pay up to 40% in tax. So the rates go up. So we call this item here, we call that a progressive tax rate. Okay, that's a progressive tax rate system and progressive tax system. And most countries have a progressive tax system thinking that, look, you know, that early income is used for your basic necessities and everybody should pay low tax on the income that they need for their basic necessities. In fact, some should have some income that's not taxed at all. That's what we call a standard deduction in the US. On the higher income, now this is income that is more available for things other than necessities. And there's an idea behind it that, well, you have an ability to pay. Okay, you have more ability to pay. So that's why, you know, the higher income people tend to pay higher taxes. Now, we've talked about all these other ways to reduce taxes, and we have, you know, we have more in this course right here. We have lots of ways to reduce tax, but the point is that there is this progressive mentality in most tax systems, and certainly in the US. And it doesn't just apply to the rates. It applies to other tax benefits. Okay, so let's look, how do benefits get limited? Okay, how do benefits get limited? And in the US, the term is adjusted gross income. And adjusted gross income is basically your, okay, you're gonna want to pay attention to this, net business income okay, your net investment income, your gross wages, and gross other income. Those are the incomes that go into this, other income. And then it's minus, okay, this, so plus, plus, plus. And then it's minus a few deductions. Okay, a few deductions. Not very much, but minus a few deductions. Now, first thing you should notice here is that it's net business income, meaning that we get to come up with our adjusted gross income, which is what's going to limit these tax benefits I'm going to talk about, is adjusted gross income. So it's net. It's net of the deductions that we got in our business, okay? So what shows up on page one of the tax return is net business income, okay? It's the net of the deductions. So that means that business deductions, we like those because, first of all, they're permanent. They're permanent and, for the most part, and they reduce our adjusted gross income. Net investment income. This is only for professional investors. So it's net only for professional investors. So this is, if we look over here at our ESBI, okay, this is net only for these guys right here. Okay, for anybody else, it's gross. So if you're a casual stock trader, you do not get deduct your expenses, period. Okay, it's gross income. If you're a casual real estate investor, for the most part, now we're going to talk about one exception actually today. For the most part, what's going to happen is you're going to be taxed on your income, but you're not actually going to be taking any losses. So it's still going to be net. It's still going to be net income, but a loss isn't going to help you. Okay. So it's net income. A loss won't help you. All right. Wages, always gross, always gross. So there's no netting against your wages. Okay, with a few exceptions, with a few deductions down here. And then other income, interest income, retirement income, dividend income. I mean, these are all gross income, right? In coming up with our adjusted gross income. Capital gains, gross income, all right? Capital gains get to be net against capital losses, but not against investment expenses. Okay, so for example, if you have an expense on trading a stock and you're not a professional stock trader, that gain from that investment is going to be the gross gain. It's not net of the expenses outside of the cost of the stock. Now, there are a few deductions, okay? And one of those deductions, we're going to talk about this, but one of those deductions here is, we'll leave it here. So one of those deductions is our, what we call our retirement plan. Okay. And actually what happens is that deduction ends up coming out of here, or it ends up coming out of here, right? So it's not actually one of those enumerated deductions typically, but there are some that are. So it's minus a few deductions. Remember, net business income, net investment income, gross wages, about the only deduction we get against gross wages is retirement plans. And we're going to talk about those in just a minute. But first of all, let's look at what's limited by adjusted gross income. Okay, remember, we're in a progressive tax rate structure, which means that the more income we make, the higher our tax rate, the higher the tax we pay on that. We're also in a progressive tax structure from the standpoint that once we get above a certain income, then certain tax benefits go away. And we're going to talk about restricted tax benefits. Restricted tax benefits. Okay, number one, first restricted tax benefit we're going to talk about is real estate losses. Now remember, if you're a professional real estate investor, your real estate losses are not limited at all. You can take 100% of your losses against other income, even against wages. So your real estate losses, this is a big deal because we get depreciation, okay? We get depreciation, which in a lot of times means that we have positive cash flow, and yet we have a loss for tax purposes, and yet we don't get them if we're a casual real estate investor, with one exception. And that's what's called the active participant exception. And under the active participant exception, we get up to $25,000 of losses per year to offset our other income. Now, active, to be an active real estate investor does not require much. I mean, literally, you sign the mortgage, you're an active real estate investor. I have literally never seen an IRS auditor who challenged that you didn't have enough to be an active real estate investor. About the only way you would not be an active real estate investor is if all you invested in were limited partnerships, and then you wouldn't. But if you have any kind of property at all that you own directly or through your LLC, then you're going to be an active real estate investor, okay? Now, there's a limit, though, okay? And there's a, what kind of limit? We have an AGI limit, okay? And the amount of the AGI limit, since AGI limits change from time to time, that's in our fast facts, okay? So go to our fast facts to know what the amount is. But here's what happens. If we can get below the AGI limit, we get $25,000. If we're above the AGI limit, we lose the benefit, lost. Okay? It is absolutely gone. So we want to get our AGI down. Okay? If we're a real estate investor and we're not a professional real estate investor. Okay? If we're not a professional real estate investor, or what we call a real estate professional, all right, then we are restricted, so we want to get our AGI down. If we can get our AGI down to the limit, again, fast facts for the limit. If we want to get our AGI down to the limit, then those restrictions go away. We get $25,000. And we don't get unlimited amount, but we get up to $25,000, which in a 40% tax bracket is worth $10,000. So it's a lot of money. Okay, it's a lot of money. All right, number two. Number two is the 20% pass-through deduction. Now, this is a new deduction as of 2017, okay? This came in the 2017 tax reform. We got this new pass-through deduction. And what it says is, basically, that a business that is in a is a sole proprietor, a partnership, or an S corporation, any one of those gets to take 20% net income times 20% equals deduction. So the idea when this was passed was to kind of equalize a little bit between the corporations at the time got this big tax rate reduction, and why is a big corporation getting and not the small business? That was kind of the argument, right? So there's this 20% deduction. Now, there's lots of limitations on the 20% reduction. And one of them is a type of business limitation. Type of business. And the types of business include my type of business. Any type of consulting. Accounting, legal, healthcare, any type of performance, okay? So athletes, artists, actors, right? Any of that kind. And there's even, you know, this an odd thing where if your income is because of your reputation, it doesn't qualify. Well, what that means is that independent contractors, which includes independent contractors, because the independent contractor, by definition, is being hired based on their reputation, right? So that's the reason for it. It's not for any other business reason. It's just because they're good, right? That's why they hired you. So you would think, well, wow, let's everybody become an independent contractor, and they'll become an employee, and we can get this 20% pass-through deduction, except there is a AGI limitation. And it's actually a taxable income, okay? Okay, And if your taxable income before the 20% deduction exceeds the threshold, okay, limit, okay, which we have in our fast facts, okay, that threshold limit, it changes every year, so we have to put it in our fast facts. So if it exceeds that threshold limit, then it phases out, and eventually it is lost. So we lose that 20%. If we can keep our AGI, it's really our AGI, it's our taxable income, but if we can keep our taxable income down below a certain level, okay, then we get it, even if we're an independent contractor, even if we're an accountant, even if they're a lawyer, you can get it. Even lawyers get this if they can get their AGI down to a certain level, which is noted in our fast facts what that limit is, okay? Once we get that down, bingo, we get an extra 20% deduction. It's amazing, okay? What else do we have? Let's go number three. Number three is the child tax credit. This is a big credit for people who have young children. Remember, credits offset dollar for dollar. It's a big credit. What happens, though, is that once your income, your adjusted gross income, once your AGI is greater than a threshold amount, the child tax credit goes away. So again, another reason we want to reduce our AGI, okay, because we get this additional benefit if we do. Let me give you a couple of others. Number four, some of you may have thought of these already. You're starting to think now, I hope. All right, education credits. Education credits are limited by AGI. AGI greater than threshold amount. What happens? That's right. They're gone. One other one that people don't often think about. And it can be a big one, especially as you get a little older, something happens in your life. You might have huge, huge medical expenses. Medical expenses are only deductible to the extent they exceed, I'm going to write this out because I need you to see the exact wording here. To the extent they exceed a percentage of AGI. So the higher your AGI, let's take an example. Let's say that your AGI were $500,000. And let's say, now the actual limit's in our fast facts, okay, the actual percentage, because that's changing from year to year, okay, let's say that it's 10%. What that means is that in this case, the first $50,000 is non-deductible. So in the case, let's say we had $45,000 of medical expense, our deduction would be zero because 45 is less than 50. So you have a huge medical expense and none of it's deductible, none of it. Now, what if we were able to reduce that AGI from 500,000 to 300,000? Now it's 10%, which is 30,000, which means that $15,000 is now deductible if we're at a 10% threshold. Okay, that 10% amount changes. Look in Fast Facts. So that 10% right here is 30K instead of 50K, and now we get an extra $15,000 deduction that we would not have had we had a $500,000 adjusted gross income. So we reduce our adjusted gross income, we get the medical expense. All right, so I hope you're starting to get the idea. And by the way, this is just a sampling. There are other credits. There are other tax benefits. Now, y'all know that, you know, when you send your kids to school, there are certain, you know, scholarships, tuition programs that only apply if your income is below a certain amount. So by the way, reducing your AGI also might qualify you for those benefits. They're not even tax benefits. Okay, understood. And some of you are thinking, yes. On the other hand, it also means I don't qualify as well for a loan. We can solve that one. We can solve that one. Okay, that's a matter of financial statements. That's a different discussion. Understand though that there are so many tax benefits. And by the way, the biggest one here is the 20%, right? Because any of you out there, any of you listening could be an independent contractor. You just have to choose to be an independent contractor. Now, you may not be able to be an independent contractor with your current employer. They may say no. Okay. And obviously, you have to think about medical, about your medical insurance, et cetera, et cetera. But 20% deduction, only being taxed on 80% of your income, is a pretty big deal. It's a lot of money. Okay. So it's not something to ignore. So what we have to do is we have to look at how can we reduce our income now when we might have these deductions. For example, child tax credit, when you were retired, we're not going to have children living with us, we hope. And the child tax credit wouldn't apply anyway because it expires at a certain age, right? So unless we get, you know, marry somebody a lot younger when we're retired, then chances are we're not going to have a child tax credit anyway. So we can defer the income to a later year when we're not going to have these limitations. Down the road, we may not be worried when we retire, we may become a real estate professional. So at that point, we don't have to worry about the AGI limit. But what we have is we have all this income we've deferred, right? And now as a real estate professional, because we have all this time on our hands, because we're not working in our business or job anymore, now all of a sudden we can use those benefits more fully and we don't have to worry about AGI. Okay, 20% deduction. Again, we're not in a business anymore. So we're not worried about the 20% deduction. So a lot of these tax benefits, now the medical we're gonna be concerned about. But there's actually other ways to deal with medical. What we're concerned about is let's get this money now and let's put it to use. Let's put it to use in our wealth strategy. And that way, what we can do is we can have more money, more leverage, build more wealth. When the time comes, yes, we're deferring. But remember, we've done everything we can to permanently reduce our taxes. And so now we're looking at how do we defer or postpone taxes. But only after. We've done everything else to permanently reduce our income and permanently reduce our taxes, okay? So now we're gonna turn to how can we defer our income? Okay, so this section is how to defer or postpone our income. Now, y'all know, you've read Tax-Free Wealth, y'all know that I don't like to defer income if I have a choice. I'm assuming that we've done everything else we can to eliminate our taxes. And now we just make so much money, and we've done everything we can, we can't eliminate any more of our tax liability. So we're going to defer income. The first way is how everybody else does it. And we're gonna call that qualified plans. It's actually a qualified retirement plan. Qualified retirement plans include, in the US, IRS. IRA, 401k, defined benefit, pension plan. These are all qualified plans. We get a deduction against our gross income for the money we put into these qualified plans. So the limits, there are limits on how much we can put in. And for IRAs and 401ks, those limits are, these are called defined contribution plans. Okay, let me put a note here so that you understand what I'm talking about. And you can speak to your CPA about this. This is a defined contribution. So how much you contribute is what's defined by the law. Okay, so we're defining the contribution. We're not defining the benefit. So a defined contribution includes an IRA, 401k. Another term we use is self-employed pension plan, SEP, okay, SEP, which is really like a, is really a solo 401k. That's really what it is. Okay. So, and then a pension plan is different because it's a pension plan is what we call a defined benefit plan. Defined benefit. So we don't define the amount of the contribution, we define the amount of the benefit. And as a general rule, we can put, the amount of money we can put in goes up each one of these. So we can, so we put a small amount in an IRA, a medium amount in a 401k or a SEP, and a large amount in a pension plan. That's really what it is. I mean, you can just put more in. Now, we have to cover other people in our business if we do this. So we need to run all the numbers. Sit down with your CPA, go through this. Never do this without sitting down with your CPA. Once again, never do this without sitting down with your CPA to run the numbers, because you want to make sure that it works financially, that it works for your investments, as well as working for your tax benefit, right? Now, we can tell you in our fast facts how much you can contribute to your IRA and your 401k because that's a defined contribution plan. We cannot tell you how much you can put into a pension plan because that's a defined benefit plan. And we don't know what your benefit's going to be. So we can't, that's going to change by how much benefit it is. Typically, your benefit can be up to 100% of your average compensation. And so how much you put in is the amount you put in to fund that's going to be required to fund that benefit. So let's say that it's your average, 100% of your average compensation for, and you're, it's going to pay out for the rest of your life beginning at age 60. And let's say your life expectancy is 85. That's 25 years. And let's say your average compensation is $200,000 a year. That's your compensation. We're not talking about business income, we're talking about your compensation, right? Wages. Let's say $200,000 a year and 25 years, that's $5 million. So you need to fund enough to pay that $5 million out. Well, of course, how much you have to fund depends on, are you 20 years old or are you 55 years old? If you're 55 years old, guess what? You're going to have to fund an awful lot for that. Well, that's deductible currently, and it's not taxable until you take it out. So you can deduct, I mean, you might be able to deduct literally if it's late, like let's say you're 55 and your defined benefit plan starts at 60 and you have 25 year lifespan, you may be able to deduct $1 million a year, right? Because 5 years, you know, and because you have to fund that, you have to fund that so that it can pay. Now it's not quite that, and you need an actuary, and you know, it's, there's some complexities that you have to sit down with professionals to deal with, your team of tax professionals. Okay, but think about that. I mean, you could easily reduce your income to zero, which you wouldn't want to do. You may, however, want to reduce it considerably so that you can get these tax benefits that you would otherwise lose. Okay, and you want to reduce your taxes currently because guess what? It's better to postpone than to pay now, typically. Okay, better to postpone than to pay now, typically. Here's number two. So qualified retirement plans, not my favorite because there's a lot of regulation on them and you can't do much. You're so limited in how you invest. Still, they're one way to do it. Number two is a captive insurance company. Now, I hope that someday I get the time to do an entire course on captive insurance because I love captive insurance companies. The IRS doesn't necessarily. I do. Now, a captive insurance company works like this. Think about as a business owner. Okay, now, captive insurance company. Let's go here to our cash flow quadrant. ESBI. Okay, number one. Who does number one work for? Number one works for the employee, self-employed, big business owner, and professional investor. So anybody can do a qualified plan. Anybody can do a qualified plan. Number two works best, the small business. The large business, it's a little tougher with a large business, and it works very well with a professional investor. And it works like this. You self-insure. Now, there's a lot of things you pay insurance for, a lot of things. For example, you may insure life, your life. You may insure as a business. You may insure the executives' lives. Okay. You may insure, property and casualty insurance. You may have some errors and omissions insurance, like I would, right? As a CPA, I'm going to have errors and omissions insurance. So there are certain insurances that you're going to have regardless. You're going to pay for that insurance. You want to make sure that you're covered. There's a whole lot of other things, business interruption, any kind of political turmoil. There's like a whole litany of things that you're going, you know what? I could buy insurance for those, but it'd be really expensive insurance. And I'm going to take my risk. I'm just going to take the risk. What if you didn't have to take that risk? In other words, what if you could self-insure and put the money aside in a pool with other business owners? And you could set the money aside. You know, we know the risk of loss is remote. However, when it comes, it's going to come. So we'd like to insure. The challenge is, wow, that's expensive though. Except in a captive insurance company, here's what happens. So here's your business. Here's your business. Now you own your captive insurance company. Okay, this is the captive. And what happens is that you pay a premium to the captive insurance company. And what you get back is insurance coverage, right? Now that premium, here's the magic. That premium is deductible to your business and non-taxable to the captive insurance company. That seems like too good to be true, doesn't it? So because it seems too good to be true, people do abuse this. So that's why the IRS doesn't like it, because people abuse it. On the other hand, if you pay a reasonable premium and get real insurance and you pool, so you're going to pool. We'll just draw this like this. All right, we'll draw a pool. You're going to pool your money with a bunch of other business owners. Okay, so there's your captive insurance and there's everybody else's, 30 other captive insurance companies, and you pull your money together, and you're pretty much all insuring the same thing, and you're going to have claims. And the claims, you know, might be as much as 3 to 5%. You're going, wow, that's money I don't have anymore. That's correct. However, you have insurance and you got this big deduction. And it can be big. Okay. I've seen you can, under the law, up to $2.2 million of premium. Well, you know what? That changes all the time. Okay. But it's in this range, 2.2 or more or less is non-taxable. So you could go up to a significant amount of premium. Now, basically, for most businesses, it's going to be everything, all the premium that would be justified. Okay. We can't, don't get aggressive on this. Be conservative in the premiums. Have a good actuary. You've got to have professionals do this. Okay. When you do the deduction, I mean, let's say the deduction were 500,000 and you're in a 40% tax bracket. That's a $200,000 tax benefit. Okay. And let's say you had a 5% loss. 5% loss would be $25,000. Okay. And you're going to have some fees. Okay. But you can tell, I mean, this number is so big that it's huge. Now, we're talking about deferral, right? Because what happens is eventually you might decide your business is over, your captive is over, you're just going to distribute the money. When that money comes back, okay, so when you actually distribute down the road, you distribute that money, that is going to be dividend income, which currently is taxed as a long-term capital gain. So you have done two things. This is defer, which gets you all those other tax benefits. Good. Okay. Plus, ready for this? You defer and you convert because you're converting from ordinary income to capital gains rates. So this is why if I had to choose between captive insurance qualified retirement plan, in a qualified retirement plan, I'm actually, that's ordinary income. So I get a deduction against ordinary income today and I pay ordinary tax on ordinary income later. So my tax rate doesn't change, assuming I'm earning the same amount of money both times. On my captive insurance, my tax rate absolutely changes. It goes down. And typically, it's going to drop by up to 50%. So captive insurance is a great way. You want to reduce your AGI and reduce taxable income. Now, this may be a great idea regardless of those other tax benefits. But my point is, this is a terrific deferral / conversion technique. All right, we've gone through two of these. I'm going to give you four more. Okay, so listen up. Here's the four. Number three, sorry, I'm going to give you two more. So I've gone through qualified plans, okay? Qualified plans, we've gone through captive insurance. I'm going to give you two more, okay? And first is, let's talk about bonus depreciation, okay? So this is really accelerated. We've accelerated our deduction. Depreciation, by definition, is a deferral. Because when you sell the property, you basically have to pay it back. Okay, it's called recapture. So we have over here, we have this recapture, which is really the same thing as when you take your money out of your 401k. Right? That's recapture. That's all that is. That's recapture of the money. You put it in, you got that deduction. Now you're recapturing it as income. So the same thing happens with bonus depreciation. Okay? Same thing. You sell the property, you have to recognize that gain. Now, we get to accelerate that. Besides bonus depreciation, there are a couple of other types of depreciation we can do. So we can do what's called a cost segregation. And I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but in a cost segregation, what we do is we identify the different things we purchased and the cost of those. So typically when we buy a piece of property, we bought land, no deduction. Okay, no deduction. We bought building, okay, small deduction. We bought land improvements like lighting, landscaping. So we bought land improvements. There's a medium deduction there. And then we bought potentially medium, actually under bonus depreciation, it could be large. And we bought contents like the flooring and the ceiling fans and the lighting and the windows covering, et cetera. And that's a large deduction, okay? So it's zero, small, medium, and large, right? So that's a cost segregation, okay? We also have, currently under the law, we have what we call Section 179, okay? Which is like bonus depreciation, where you get to deduct the cost of certain things, and that, you know, that may apply here, and it may apply here. Bonus depreciation, same thing. Typically applies to these two items, right? So it could be in real estate, it could be in your business, right? So you're taking accelerated depreciation. Well, what happens? Well, when you sell it, obviously, you actually have to pick that back up, that recapture. Unless in real estate, we can do something that's really fun. We've talked about it in other courses called a Section 1031 exchange. And this postpones it even farther, postpones it further into the future. And we can actually do this. We can postpone until death. And then if we postpone until death, the recapture goes away. It becomes permanent. So we can actually shift from deferral to permanent. We've talked about this other times. We call it buy. You buy the real estate. You borrow from it. That's how you get your cash out of it. And then you die and the tax goes away. Okay. So all that accelerated depreciation in real estate literally can go away. Okay, it can go away, and it goes away through a 1031 exchange, and we exchange till we die. We need cash out, we borrow it. Here's four ways that we can defer an enormous amount of income. So you might go, oh, man, I got like $800,000 of income. How am I ever going to get down low enough so I can take that 20% deduction? Well, I just gave you four ways to do it. And not one of these ways, by the way, do you give up money, okay? There's few costs involved, but you're not really giving anything up. You're getting a tax benefit, plus you're keeping the money, okay? You take the bonus depreciation, you still have the assets. You do a 1031, you still have the assets. You do a captive insurance company, you still have the money. It's in, just in a different company. You do a qualified plan, you still have the money. It's just in a qualified plan. It's just in a different account. So you're not giving up your money. You're simply postponing the tax to a later year, okay? Not because you're going to retire poor, but rather because there are some tax benefits that you could get now that you might lose if you defer. If you don't defer because of the AGI limitations or taxable income limitations, in addition to that, you just don't want to pay the tax now. You want to defer because deferral is usually better than paying tax now. It's usually better than paying tax now. As long as you are investing, you know, it fits your investment strategy. So with that, remember, we always take permanent tax reduction first. That's most of the tax law, 5,600 pages. Then we go to deferral. And even in deferral, we do everything we can to make that deferral permanent. Okay? And that may mean a 1031. That may mean the captive insurance where we – captive insurance, by the way, that can go generational, right? So that doesn't have to go that can be permanent because, by the way, if we own that captive insurance company when we die, that deferral is now permanent. That deferral is now permanent, okay, because we get a step-up in basis for that captive insurance company. So we do everything we can to – permanently eliminate our taxes, then we defer. We defer also so that we get additional tax benefits. And when we do, what do we end up with? Way more money and way less taxes. See you next time.